Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
So we're ticking down the days. Monday, I understand, is the big day in Oklahoma where teachers across that state are talking about hitting the picket lines in a giant walkout to kind of emulate what's going on, what went on in West Virginia and in Oklahoma. I mean, it's kind of amazing to me that the legislature said, here's $6,000. Will that help? And the folks are saying, no, evidently, no, we want better than this. Now, it's not just about the money. It's about working conditions. It's about the conditions under which students learn. It's about, oh, hey, by the way, maybe having permanent teachers. Gee, there would be an interesting idea, attracting more qualified teachers, which is why I've asked Aaron Baker to come talk with us. He's an Oklahoma teacher, eighth grade history teacher, also one of the folks, I guess. We'll see what he's going to do on Monday. Aaron, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So am I getting this right? You guys are looking at a Monday walkout date?
Monday is certain. A lot of things are moment by moment here between the House and the Senate. They're passing it back and forth, and a lot of people have waffled a little bit, and some districts are saying, well, they're going to go back. And so Monday's for sure, and my district, we've got a supportive superintendent. We're looking at the week.
Oh, wow. Now, again, you know, that's really the important part. I think the part in West Virginia that was really important is that the superintendents who said, you know what, we're not going to deal with half the teachers or this or that. We're just going to shut it down until we figure this out, which I think was an important part of that victory.
Absolutely, absolutely. The superintendents are polling the teachers, and when the poll comes back that the teachers aren't going to be there, then there's not going to be any school.
Yeah.
That simple.
Now, from my perspective, the superintendents, I would think that they would want the teachers to do well so that more funding comes into the schools so that it's easier to operate. So it just seems like there's a natural interest right there.
That's absolutely right. There's a coalition between between teachers union and the administrators. We've got a common enemy in this. You know, a superintendent might be a boss on a normal basis, but the real dirty work here is the legislators.
Yeah, I mean, because you come back to it, I've had conversations with teachers all over the country who have told the stories of, look, you know, all of these years of defunding, these years of taking money from schools, and it falls down onto the teachers who end up working for poverty wages in some cases, end up taking money out of their pockets to pay for supplies, and, you know, and a lot of teachers leaving. So you end up with maybe not the best qualified people in the classroom. It just seems like, you know, now is that kind of boiling point where, you know, you guys as teachers have said, you know what, the heck with it. We've had enough.
You're absolutely right. And it's fascinating to see it happen in a deeply red state, a right-to-work state. We actually, you know, we're called the Oklahoma Education Association because union is a bad word around here. And we don't have any sort of pay-in on non-members, but we still do negotiate pretty wide-reaching around the state. And so it's a fascinating thing to see people mobilized that have been conditioned to not like collective action.
No, you're absolutely right. But, you know, here's the thing, and this is where you guys as teachers, and, you know, we're seeing this all across the country. And I was saying this at the beginning of the West Virginia strike, that this is the greatest civics lesson that you can give your students. You know, standing up, standing together and fighting for not just yourselves, not just, you know, higher wages and better benefits for yourself, but better opportunities for them is in my view, the best civics lesson, the best class you could give.
You're absolutely right. We're 10 years, no raise. And what we'd like to see in terms of funding, and that's really what our message is now, because the House came out with a pay raise on Monday night, and the Senate has they've played around with it a little bit, but they're trying to throw us a bone on the pay raises, but they have not even come close to what we're asking for the funding for the formula, because if we could just get back to 08, where we were with funding in 08, we would be in a pretty good position. And so we're not going to back down. We're going to walk until what we've said. And that's what's interesting too, is that people have said, well, you know, we'll work with us here. It's like, well, you know, you've had your time, and we've been at the negotiating table before, with legislation, but when the groundswell happened, the Education Association put forth demands, and they haven't been met. And the time for negotiation is over when you put that out and say we're going to walk, unless, then that's what's going to happen. We're going to walk until those demands are met.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, you had a decade to make this right, and all they did was, and it's not just Oklahoma; it's states all across the country who have defunded public education. And you end up with scenarios where, and I've had, you know, these conversations, well, like I said, with teachers all across the country who say, you know, we've got emergency temporary teachers in a bunch of classes, that we should have, you know, good quality teachers who left to go do something else or left to go to another state because wages and benefits were better. It just seems like the legislature is, you know, that old saying of, you know, pound wise, penny foolish. It just seems like that right in front of us.
Absolutely, we've got the emergency certification class, and just like you said, it's through the roof since we've had such an exodus of teachers into neighboring states, and you know, they're great people.
Sure, they're great people, but
what's happening in Oklahoma is we're continuing to excel under like continuing demise. Like, it's just like it keeps laying on and piling on and piling on, but you know, we continue to educate students to the very best of our ability. But yeah, we need the funding there so we can attract students, so we can have teachers who are professionally trained.
You know, at the end of this, you look at, where did all the money go? I mean, you said you wanted to get back to 2008 levels. You know, you had the money in 2008. Over the last decade, where did those resources end up?
Yeah, there was a piece a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember who put this out, but it, you know, something about Oklahoma. There are states who want to mimic Oklahoma the last 10 years or so, because it's been an exercise in extremely small government. We've got a 75% threshold for any revenue-raising measures, and that's unparalleled anywhere in the country, as far as I understand. And so, when that happened Monday night, it just takes an act of God, because it, you know, something like 15 people in the House vote against something, and it's gone. So, and you know, we've got people, and this is happening everywhere too. We've got people in the GOP that they brazenly talk about, you know, they don't support public education, and they may not use those exact words, but their support for education reform, their support for voucher systems, really lets us know where their allegiances lie, and so they're just a no every time on anything related to just, you know, providing a free education to all of our students.
So basically what you're saying is they're creating a crisis so they can privatize public education, because they've destroyed it, and someone's got to come in and clean it up, and then they'll throw a bunch of money at it, right?
There you go. Defund it, over-regulate it, throw in the standardized test. We've got an A through F grading system that puts a label on all of our schools, which is it's a measure of poverty. And then at the back end, like you said, is criticize and say our system is failing. We got to come up with something new. Let's send our kids to the private schools with this money.
It's amazing stuff. And in the process, what you don't have is the specialization that you need. I mean, you know, you look at all of the things. If you're staffing classrooms with emergency teachers, you know, are you getting reading specialists? Are you getting, you know, language specialists? Are you getting librarians? Are you getting people who this is their life's work? Are you getting people who, you know, identify with the people that they're teaching? I mean, I read all of these studies that, you know, minorities do better when they have minority teachers standing in front of the classroom. If you're barely able to hold on to the teachers you have and bring in some emergency folks, you don't have the ability to go out and bring in the kind of professionals that you need.
That's absolutely right. And so, yeah, I think funding and a living wage is step one. And there's about 15, 20 more steps. And somewhere along the way, you get toward aggressive recruitment of teachers of color and just high levels of training and cultural competency for white teachers. And for me, I'm not unique. I saw a statistic, something about in California, the percentage of white teachers is roughly the same as the percentage of students of color. And so it's kind of a staggering statistic. So when you look at it, you realize that, sure, you've got white teachers who teach in predominantly white schools. But my situation is neither urban, where it's predominantly like high percentages of black and brown, but it's also not suburban and mostly white. We're lower middle class, kind of in between those two, and that's where you see a high percentage of white teachers with a diverse classroom, but still white students are in the minority. And so one of the things I'm trying to do is to just get white teachers to think about their whiteness and to take that into the classroom with them.
I'm trying to think of how that works. explain a little bit.
Okay. So, sometimes what you hear from some white teachers is you rarely hear anymore people say, well, you know, I'm colorblind. Like, I want to pretend like everyone's the same.
Right.
You, people don't say that. What they say is, I treat everyone the same, or I have high expectations for all. And these things, like, sound really good, but at the end or underlying these statements is this idea that they're not accounting for race. They're not thinking critically about race in the classroom. And so if someone says, and you hear this all the time, someone says, regardless of race, with, like, we need to regard race. Even, you know, though it's a social construct, it's something that is very real in our culture. And we bring those constructs into our classroom as teachers, and students bring those identities with them. And so if we're going for equity, if we're trying to raise students up who have been disproportionately disciplined, who have not been given the same opportunities as their peers in other schools or even in the same school, then so white teachers have to go in with that mentality, not with, you know, it really is a sense of going into school every day and saying, you know what, I'm not going to treat my students all the same. I'm going to think about these critical issues that we, these identities that we bring with us, and we're going to work together. We're going to create this culture together.
And funding would help that.
Like I said, that's a start. But you know, the DeVosses of the world, they don't know. They truly don't know what happens in the school. And I think you were hinting on this as well. You really have to be inside to see the miracles that happen. And I don't want to use that word lightly, but I said one time that, you know, four teenagers walk into a Target and you know, their loss prevention department, you know, just loses their mind. But, you know, schools deal with teenagers in mass numbers every day. Like, that's a thing that no one else wants to do. And when students go to school and they're safe and they go home and they've learned something along the way, it's truly a miraculous thing. And it takes everyone at the very top of their game every single day. I've been in, this is kind of a second career for me. And so the things that I bring to school every day, things I bring into the classroom, they're the very best that I can imagine in any profession in terms of professionalism and preparation.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, you're talking about the future of this country. I mean, you know, you say what you want. They are the next leaders. They are the next, you know, construction workers. They are the next doctors and lawyers and, you know, street sweepers. They're the future. And if you don't invest, and it's always amazing to me that, you know, we don't want to seem to invest in them now, but we complain about when you have to send people to prison. I mean, it just seems really backwards in my view. I mean, if we spent the amount of money that we spend on war and on a prison on actually educating and giving kids, you know, opportunities, I don't know that we'd have the problems we have.
Absolutely. I mean, public schools are like roads, you know, everybody uses them, whether they're, you know, whether they've got kids directly in one or not, you know, everyone's connected to a public school in one way or another. It's a big, big thing. And, those who pretend like, you know, they can avoid it or they don't need it or they're going to retract from this, are really kind of fooling themselves.
Yeah.
And they're benefiting from the work that the rest of us are doing.
Yeah, as the bumper sticker I saw the other day said, if you can read this, thank a teacher. And thank you for the work that you guys do. And I wish you nothing but the best on Monday going forward. And I know it's going to be, you're fighting the righteous fight. You're fighting the good fight. And I'd love to have you come back again and tell us how everything turns out and how things go.
Thanks, Rick, so much. Appreciate
good stuff.
It.
Appreciate it, Aaron. Good stuff. Aaron Baker, Oklahoma school teacher. And again, you know, what's going to happen on Monday? I think we all know. You're going to see this sign of solidarity. And like I said, the best kind of civics lesson that you could possibly give to students. Seeing in front of them, in real time, in live action, civil disobedience, organized with a purpose, with a cause, redress of our government. I mean, all of those themes. Just amazing stuff. Good on you, Aaron. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you back here tomorrow.
It's coming from the wind. You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperialist.